Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk Nerdy. It is Monday, April 4th, and I'm your host, Kara Santa Maria. I want to thank you guys for bearing with me. Last week, there was not a new episode of Talk Nerdy. My grandmother just passed away, and I've been struggling to manage a lot of things in this world this week. So I took a little bit of breathing time, but I am back this week and I really appreciate all of your support. I'm so excited about my guest this week. But before we jump into that, I want to thank those of you who have made Talk Nerdy possible over on the Patreon portal. And of course, you can become a patron of Talk Nerdy by going to patreon.com/talknerdy. I want to thank Phil T-Bear, Timothy Glover, The Honorable Husband, still love that name, Gabriel Felipe Jaramillo Gonzalez, Ken Pfeiffer, Brian Holden, and Jeffrey Sewell. And I want to remind you guys that there are a lot of ways to support the show. You can figure them all out by visiting KaraSantaMaria.com. And I have just replenished the Talk Nerdy store. So we now have t-shirts back in stock in every size. If you've been waiting, you can check them out there. I also have a whole new batch of leather bookmarks that'll be coming in soon. They're being handmade just for you as we speak. But in the meantime, I'm really excited to start the show. This week I have a repeat guest, one of very few repeat guests, and somebody whom I respect very dearly. He is the author of Fighting God, an Atheist Manifesto for a Religious World. And I had the honor of writing the foreword to that book. He's also the president of American Atheists. Without any further ado, here he is, David Silverman. Well, David, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, Kara, thank you for having me back on the show. I'm excited to be here.
I am so excited. So you are only, let me think, maybe my second, maybe my third return guest. And I'm so pumped because it's been too long. Unfortunately, we're recording remotely. I am not able to have the chance to see you.
Well, just imagine that I look really great. imagine that I have great hair and that I'm wearing, you know, this really handsome suit, and that, and definitely imagine that I'm sitting up straight.
Sure. I'm sure that's the case. So I have to ask, I'm going to see you, right, at the Reason Rally.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good.
I'm going to be at the Reason Rally. I am so excited for the second Reason Rally, Kara, because, you know, for the first one, I was the president and I was the executive producer, and I basically ran the show, and we had 30,000 atheists at Washington, D.C. This year, I've got kind of a better job in that I'm not running the show. I'm just running programming. Mm-hmm. So I get to watch somebody else do all the hard stuff, and I just have to put together the schedule. But I've got my hands on the Reason Rally schedule.
Ooh.
And I got to tell you something, Kara, this is going to be one hell of a show.
I'm so excited.
I am so excited. There are most of the people that are on the calendar are people that we've already announced, mm-hmm. like Amber Heard and of course, Bill Nye and God damn it, I forgot his name. Don't you hate it when you have somebody
like on the tip of your tongue?
Yes, of course. But at any rate, it's just so many people that are coming. And now it's going to piss me off. Now I have to be
I'm going to look at it. I'm looking it
no,
up
I'm
right
so
now.
I'm so embarrassed because it is, you know, Johnny Depp. Thank you. Johnny Depp is
that's
coming.
That's crazy. And Johnny Depp is coming?
Johnny Depp is coming.
Well, that's why you couldn't remember because that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I first started the Reason Rally way back when when I first came up with the idea, I think it was in 2009, you know, part of the objective was to get A-list celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
We as a movement need A-list celebrities identifying with us openly and proudly. And part of the concept of the Reason Rally was to have an event so large that A-list celebrities would come. And so now we've got Johnny Depp and Amber Heard both coming proudly and loudly to support us. And that is just great. It's opening up so much more. We've also got Margaret Cho coming. We've got Bill Nye coming. And we've got a few more people that I haven't announced yet, that we haven't announced yet, that I can't announce. But it's turning out to be one hell of a show.
I am so excited and I'm honored. I was actually asked to come and speak at the Reason Rally and I wasn't there the first time. And so I want to know from the horse's mouth, what can I expect? What's it going to be like?
Well, Kara, I mean, the biggest thing that you're going to feel is the really unique, amazing feeling of being in a place with 30, 40, 50,000 other atheists.
Wow. Okay?
That is just an amazing feeling. I remember the first time when I walked into a room full of atheists. It was 1996, and there were maybe 150, 200 people there. And then the Reason Rally had 30,000 atheists. Okay? 30,000 atheists. And you know, the thing is that so many people, so many of us think we are weak and we think we are small.
Yeah.
But we're not, right? We're not small. We're divided. That's the problem. It's not that there aren't any atheists in this country. It's that 90% of the atheists in this country call ourselves something else and might even deny being atheists. So we have this huge amount of strength that we never, ever wield, that we never even have an idea that we have because we're so divided. And when we look at the Reason Rally and we look at 30, 40, 50,000 people coming for Reason Rally too, that's going to be the most intense experience for you, Kara. When you stand up, I mean, Kara, what's the largest audience that you've spoken in front of? Give me an idea.
I probably max maybe a couple thousand.
Okay.
Max.
So imagine standing up, and this is going to be you, okay? Standing up at the Lincoln Memorial where Martin Luther King spoke, speaking to 30, 40, 50,000 atheists. And all of us looking at each other and seeing our size in person. It's not about going to a convention where you meet a 500 or 1,000 people. It's about tens of thousands of us all gathering at one time. And you know what it's going to be? It's not like a lecture. It's not like a protest. This is a party, okay? This is comedy. This is music. This is fun. I heard many people saying that the biggest problem with Reason Rally 1 was that when they left, their faces were too sore from smiling so much. It was just it's just such an electric experience to be in a situation where we consider ourselves small so often. We look at those polls and we say, oh, you know, the Christians are 75% and the atheists are 3%, but that's wrong. Okay, that's wrong. A lot of Christians are atheists, and atheists call themselves by any number of definitions other than atheist 90% of the time, statistically speaking.
Why do you think that is? Is it really just because the label has so much baggage?
It is not so much the label. I mean, as you read when I in Fighting God, I actually looked at that specific issue, the issue of atheist, the word having the baggage.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that, you know, people use these other words because they have less baggage, but it just so happens to correlate that the baggage correlates with the knowledge of the word.
Hmm.
So in other words, atheist has the most baggage. The next most baggage-laden word is agnostic. The next most baggage-laden word is secular. The next most baggage-laden word is humanist. And that's exactly the way that the words are known. 87% of the country knows what an atheist is. 50% of the country knows what an agnostic is. 30% of the country knows what a secular is. And 10% of the country, a whopping 10% of the country, knows what a humanist is.
So when people call themselves humanists, nobody is offended by it because they don't know what it means.
Exactly. And so you're literally using a nothing word so that you don't have to address the issue. The issue isn't the word atheist. It's the concept of atheism. Mm-hmm. And that's the very thing that we're trying to defeat. So when you use one of those softer words, you are actually shying away from activism. You are actually shying away from fixing the problem. And in Fighting God, I challenge people on the ethics of that. I challenge people on that. You know, people say, I want to tell people what I am and not tell people what I'm not. But when you use a word that has a 90% chance of being misunderstood, and that, of course, means a 90% chance of being inferred theistic.
Yeah.
What are you fighting? What are you saying? Or are you even being honest? Are you even being truthful? I say no.
It makes me wonder, you know, when I use the atheist label very proudly. I know a lot of other people who do, and I know some people who don't. And I can expect the reaction that I get when I say it to people who are believers. Like, their reaction to the atheist label is predictable. But when I say it to people who I know are non-believers or who maybe are not that committed to their belief. And on the rare occasion, I mean, I live in LA, I live in a progressive place, and I kind of surround myself with other, you know, non-religious people at the very least. But when I say it to somebody who I think is probably an atheist too, and they're kind of like, ugh. Like, when they have that gut reaction to the word, yeah. Where is that coming from? Because it can't be the religious baggage, can it?
It is. That's exactly what it is. You know, we have to realize as atheists that we are also victims of religious indoctrination.
Yeah.
We are also victims of this religious pedestal that society puts on us. The example that I use is my mother. I use my mother for a lot of examples. I found once that my mother was paying money to go to a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a little bit angry and I sat my mother down and I explained to her why psychics are scams. I explained to her how psychics work, why psychics are scams. She says, but it makes me feel good. I said, if you want, I will lie to you and you don't have to pay me anything, right? So I sat my mother down and I convinced her not to go to a psychic. And then I asked people, did I do the right thing? Mm-hmm. Well, people say, of course I did the right thing. I helped my mother away from paying money for a scam. But when it comes to a bigger scam, religion, a scam with exactly the same amount of proof, zero. A scam that we can see causes more damage. We atheists, we shy away from talking about atheism because we put religion on a pedestal because religion demands it. We say, oh, closely held religious beliefs, that's not the same kind of scam as psychics and tarot card readers. That's somehow above those. But we can't quite tell why. We just want to put it above there. And the reason is because we have been taught to respect religion. And we say, okay. So when you're talking to atheists who don't like to use the word atheist, you're talking to people who are putting religion on a pedestal, who don't like to use the word atheist because it's not nice to religion, because religious people don't like to hear it. And religious people don't like to hear it because it's not nice to religion. It's something that we have to deal with, this knee-jerk reaction that we have against pushing atheism, this knee-jerk reaction we have against talking to people about religion. That helps religion and only religion. It doesn't help us. It doesn't help the believers. It helps religion. When we say, oh, I'm not going to attack your closely held religious beliefs, but we would say, I'm going to attack your closely held belief that psychics are real.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting religion on a pedestal because religion wants us to put it on a pedestal. We are doing exactly what religion wants us to do. And in Fighting God, I talk about the ethics of that. I talk about why that's the wrong thing for us to do, why that's an actually unethical thing for us to do. We need to embrace the A word. We need to use the A word. And we also need to embrace the idea that religion deserves to die. And we have no need for it in today's society. And that killing religion dead is a good deed to do. And that helping people away from religion is doing them a favor.
So that argument is a good example of a microcosm, I think, of your new book, which, mm-hmm. shameless plug, I wrote the foreword to.
Thank you, by the way.
Yes, no, of course. So you mentioned Fighting God. This book came out only just a few months ago now, right?
Yeah,
it hasn't been out 3 months. Wow.
Yeah.
So still very, very new. And your approach in the book is unapologetically firebrand. This is your mm-hmm. approach in life. And the book is a very good argument for why firebrand atheism has a place, must exist. But as I said, it's unapologetic in many ways. And I will be the first to admit that our approaches in atheism aren't fully in line, although I fully respect your approach to atheism because I feel very strongly that it takes all types.
Right.
You would probably counter argue that more of us need to be on the firebrand side. And so I was wondering if maybe you could make that argument here on the podcast so I could hear some of your most important points.
Well, the first thing that we have to say is, yes, absolutely, it takes all kinds inside the movement, mm-hmm. all right? And the one of the early thoughts I had when I first started making this book is to make the argument that it takes all sides and that the firebrand argument is relevant. The firebrand argument is important. Mm-hmm. So many times I hear from the humanist side, from the nice guy side, really not nice things.
Yeah.
Okay. I get a lot of heat. I get a lot of grief. I get a lot of I get a lot of swears. I get a lot of hostility from the so-called nice guy side of the movement.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrong. And I think we as a movement have to stick together. We as a movement have to understand that this movement is broad, that atheism is a very, very broad term,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to own that and we need to work with that. Now, firebrand atheism is more effective. I can show in fighting God, I can actually do something that I don't think any other nonprofit organization, I don't think any other nonprofit organization, period, can do what I can do. And I'm open to being proven wrong on that because I certainly haven't done a serious study. But what I can do is I can show independent, quantifiable data for that shows an actual effect of American atheist firebrand activity on the country. I can quantify that stuff.
Okay.
I can defend the notion, the idea, with independent quantitative data that firebrand atheism is changing this country for the better. All right? And I can show that, and I use real skepticism in fighting God. As you saw, I try to prove myself wrong and fail. I use multiple sources and combine the different quantitative research projects.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it really hard, and I can show that we, specifically American atheists, are changing this country.
And how can you tell that?
Well, the first thing I do is I look at Google searches for the word atheist,
mm-hmm.
and I correlate Google searches for the word atheist before and after I became president of American Atheists, and I align peaks in Google searches for the word atheist with American Atheist activity after I became president, and it lines up very strongly. Every time American Atheist does something, it peaks searches in the word atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in line with that, correlating with that is people coming out as atheists. Correlating with that is people coming out as agnostics. And also correlating with that is people becoming more tolerant of atheists, more willing to vote for an atheist to be president. There's a lot of – I mean, yes, correlation is not causation. You and I both know that. But I'm saying I can defend it, and I can defend it quantitatively. And I look at several different sources, and I can tell, or at least I can make the argument, that American atheists is single-handedly changing this country with firebrand atheism. And then I go into the arguments of why firebrand atheism is supposedly bad. What exactly is so bad about it? Well, if you look at it, the only reason it's bad is because it does exactly the opposite of what religion wants us to do. Okay? Religion wants us to shut up and sit down and not call ourselves atheists. In fact, if you think about it, religion definitely wants us to not call ourselves atheists. It wants us to call ourselves something that, oh, I don't know, might be mistaken for theism 90% of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what religion would want. And so when we kowtow to religion, when we say, oh, I don't want to say I'm an atheist, we are doing what religion wants us to do. When I say, oh, I'm not going to attack your closely held religious beliefs, we're doing exactly what religion wants us to do. And it's not nice. It's not ethical. It's not the right thing to do. It's not caring. It's not humanistic. If you and I are going to agree that religion is wrong, religion is a poison, religion is something that literally poisons the mind, well, letting it live and let live is not a nice thing to do, okay? If somebody is going to give all their money to a psychic or a tarot card reader or some guy that's going to pray for them, that's a scam. That's a scam. And if you're going to sit there and say, okay, well, hey, I'm going to respect that scam because, of course, the scam wants me to respect the scam. So I'm going to respect the scam, and I'm going to sit by and say, oh, it's okay, Kara. You can keep giving money to your psychic because it's one of your closely held beliefs. Well, guess what? I'm not being a good friend. I'm not being a nice person. I'm shying away from a conflict to your detriment and my benefit. I'm getting a little bit of a warm fuzzy, and the crap in your mind, the cement that on the pedestal on which religion sits or whatever scam sits in your mind, is cemented by me. I help the scam when I say I respect your beliefs. I help the scam and hurt you when I say I respect your beliefs. When I say, oh, your beliefs are relevant. It's important for you, so it's important for me. It's your truth. It's true to you. When I do that kind of stuff, I help religion and I hurt you. And that's why saying that you're, you know, avoiding atheism, calling yourself something other than an atheist, and being permissive, being live and let live to religion is unethical. And it's the wrong thing to do.
And what do you think is the appropriate approach based on that reasoning for individuals who are, like, I have a good example right now. So, and it's very relevant to my life in this moment because my grandmother recently passed away, actually just this last week, which is, you know, it's tough. Yeah, it's tough. But yeah. She was ill for a very long time. She lived a very long life. She was in her 90s and she went comfortably. So it was kind of the best case scenario for something that we all deal with in our lives, but that's right. Difficult nonetheless. And my grandmother, of course, was Catholic, like most people's grandmothers are.
Right.
And so, you know, I actually won't be able to make her funeral, but I'll be attending the burial. And some of my family is there for the rosary. And this is a very religious funeral. My grandfather had a similar one. I did go to that. And I did the things that I knew to do at a Catholic service, which is apparently if you put your arms across your chest when you go up for the the communion, they understand that you yourself don't identify. And so the priest like blesses your forehead or does something crazy, but like doesn't give you communion. And it's kind of a way, again, to respect the wishes of my grandmother. She was very hell-bent at the time that I go up for communion and that I do all of the rites, even though I don't believe in them. And so there's sometimes these sensitive times in people's lives where I wonder if it's less about respecting the religion and more about respecting the personal traditions and the personal ideologies of the individual. It's not the thing. It's the person who holds on to the thing that, for me, I want to respect. It's not the thing itself. Religion is bullshit, as I know, and I say it all the time. But there are situations in life where I feel like I'm being disrespectful to the person, the same way if they were to say, you know, something about, gosh, I don't even know, about how they feel about a situation, and I were to disagree and say you shouldn't feel that way. Is that really fair of me?
Kara, what about them respecting you?
Yeah.
Isn't it horribly disrespectful for your grandmother to say to you, hey, Kara, I know you're an atheist, but I want you to go up and do this religious ceremony. So I don't care that you're an atheist. I want you to go up and do this religious ceremony. If you said to your grandmother, hey, Grandma, I know you're a Christian, but I want you to deny God, you know, in front of a whole bunch of people for me right now. Would that be respectful? See, the thing is that your grandmother was really, really disrespectful to you.
I don't see it that way. It's interesting.
Oh, but she was.
Yeah.
Oh, but she was.
I don't see it that way.
I mean, and let me, and she wasn't doing it overtly.
Sure.
She wasn't even doing it consciously. I'm not saying she was like, oh, hell with Kara.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying that what she asked of you was horribly disrespectful. Now, what was that? What was going on there? Well, your grandmother was not a stupid person, but she was, just like my mother, a victim of a lie, a victim of a con, a victim of a scam. And what does that scam do? That scam convinces your grandmother to guilt you into lying, to guilt you into observing, because it's not just for her. Just observe for her the religion. Get on your knees, go to church, get on your knees for this guy, go up for communion, get blessed, do something that you don't believe in at all. In fact, do something that clearly endorses the exact opposite of what you think. Act that way for her. She is doing this because she's a victim of the scam of religion. Now, I'm not going to tell you, because you began that question with how would you do it in an individual way. I'm not going to tell you how to behave. I will tell you what I would have done.
Sure.
I won't do it.
Interesting.
Okay? If my grandmother, and I'll tell you exactly a similar system. Mm-hmm. My mother died a few years ago. She died of cancer. She knew she was going. And she asked me if I would say the prayer for her after she died, the Kaddish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I said, no. I said, I will not. She said, why not? I said, because I don't believe in it, and I'm not going to lie at your funeral. I'm not going to have one of my last memories of you to be a lie. And she understood that. And so what I would have done, and I, like I said, it's all individual, okay? There are good times to do it and bad times to do it.
Sure, yeah.
But there's never a good time to lie. And I would say there's never a good time to say, okay, I'm going to put everything that I am aside and get on my knees in front of a preacher, a priest who makes money selling lies so that he can bless me in the name of a God that doesn't exist to please my, unfortunately, dead grandmother who isn't there. I would not have done that. I would say that was a lie, and that I would not lie for my grandmother or for my mother. And I told my mother that. And you know what, Kara, when I told my mother that I wasn't going to lie at her funeral, she smiled. She smiled, and she looked at my sister, and she said, will you do it? And my sister said, yeah, I'll do it. And my mother said, okay. And that was the end of that. But no, I think there are times and places for everything, and I'm not saying at all that you should have tried to convert your grandmother on her deathbed.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to say that at all, right? That's not where I'm going. But what I'm saying in Firebrand Atheism, the core is to tell the truth and not to lie. The core is that to tell the truth so that you didn't give. I mean, you're a pretty famous person, Kara. You've got family who are Catholic, and they know you're an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you think it cemented the religion in their mind just a little bit to see you on your knees in front of a priest? Don't you think it legitimized their religion just a little bit to see you, a known famous atheist, on your knees for a priest?
I mean, personally, I don't think so, but I also don't think my family sees me as a famous person. My family sees me as me. But I don't know. I think part of the difference here is that it seems like a lot of the arguments that you make are predicated on the idea that the world would be better off, that religion shouldn't exist at all, that somehow it's you know, this big lie, which I agree with, that it's a big lie or a big scam, but that if we could rid the world of it somehow, which to me is a bit of a lofty goal, I'm sure you agree with that. That's a tough order.
It sounds like I think religion, the world would be better off without religion because the world would be better off without religion.
There you go.
It sounds like I want religion to die
because I want religion to die.
Right. That's absolutely true. And that's something that we all need to embrace, because religion is a lie. Religion is a scam. Religion is a con. And this world would be better off without any lies or scams or cons. This world would be better off if we all knew facts and we all lived in reality. This world would be better off if scams were off the table, if the invisible man in the sky was viewed as a myth. The world would just be better off like that, by leaps and bounds, and everybody who thinks they need religion would be better off without it. And the only reason they think they need religion is, of course, because religion has told them that they need religion.
And I think that assumption, which I probably fundamentally agree with, that mm-hmm. the world would be better off without religion, is a bit of an easier said than done. And it's a little bit of a, I think it's missing a little bit of nuance in the fact that, kind of coming from a sort of privileged intellectual position, it's easier to make that argument. I think that there are a lot of places in the world, and there are a lot of individuals in the world coming from various backgrounds, various societies, for whom the kind of enlightened viewpoint is not so easy to come to.
Oh, I completely agree with that. It's definitely easier said than done. But if you come at the world from that perspective, when you come at the world looking at religion and seeing it for the pox that it is, the cancer that it is, yeah, you know, I mean, getting rid of cancer from the entire species, that's a huge lofty goal too. But it's a good thing to look forward to. And it's not a good thing to say, well, we can't defeat cancer everywhere, so maybe a little bit of cancer is okay. It's not. It's all bad. It's all a lie. It's all a scam. And yeah, I would like to, you know, wave my magic wand and make religion go away and make everybody understand why there's no man in the sky and why one man in the sky is equal to every other man in the sky. And I completely get, and I talk about this in Fighting God, that, you know, from different people from different perspectives are differently indoctrinated and differently brainwashed, and to get them to see religion for what it is a hugely lofty goal. But it's still the perspective from which we must attack religion, because we need to understand, and maybe this is one of the major points of Fighting God, is that this is not my truth versus your truth. This is not my favorite color is red, your favorite color is blue. This is correct versus incorrect. This is lies versus truth. This is honesty versus scam. We are the good guys, and we are fighting lies, scams, cons. We are fighting things that make war and division out of lies with empty promises that take money. This is a terrible, terrible industry, and it deserves to die. And we need to own the fact that, yes, everybody has a constitutional right to do equal things, and everybody has the equal rights to have their religion. But religion is crap. Religion is a scam. Religion is a con. Religion deserves to die, and killing it dead is a good deed. That's the starting point. That's where we all should be looking at, and that's why I think we should really consider, when we're talking about atheism, we need to realize that we're doing good when we're doing that. We're helping people, the listeners, even the listeners who hate to hear us, even the listeners who say, you're offending me by saying that, get helped when we say it.
And what is your response to individuals who tend to have an approach that's probably a little more similar to mine, which is, you know, I want to philosophize about these things. I want to understand them intellectually. I want to have a lot of good conversations, and I want to do good deeds to show people out there in the world that this is what an atheist looks like. That's a very important part of my activism, is to be good and be a good citizen, so that, and wear the label proudly so that people can see that correlation. But what do
big, you... Big, important difference there. Big thing right there. Wearing that label proudly is like the number one thing. And I'm going to cut you off.
Sure.
But if we're talking, if I'm just talking to people like you, Kara, the people who don't want to be an outward firebrand atheist, the number one thing I would ask you is to use the word atheist.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't shy away and use any of those other fake terms, those other euphemisms that makes us look smaller. If you're going to live your life leading by example, putting a smile on your face, making people see the nice side of atheism, you're going to completely moot your effort if you don't use the word atheist.
And I fundamentally agree with that. That's been, I mean, yes, that is, I am in that chorus. I say that a lot, because what is the point of trying to basically rebrand? You know, right. I say it all the time. It's funny because I equate it also to the word nerd. I'm somebody who is really proud of the term nerd. I'm really proud of the idea of being a scientific thinker, a skeptic, an intellectual, an atheist. All of these things define who I am. And I feel like some of them, as we discussed before, have baggage. And the way to counter that baggage is to show people what it looks like.
That's right.
And to show people why you're proud of it.
And that is so epically important, Kara. That's something I think a whole bunch of atheists really should agree with. And I make that case so strongly and so heavily in Fighting God. Our number one problem is not that we are weak. It's that we don't know our own strength because we are so divided. And nobody knows our strength because we are so divided. So using the word atheist, even for the nicest folks, even for the people for whom David Silverman is some huge asshole, they still need to use the word atheist if they're going to conquer the bigotry against us. Don't hide behind the euphemisms. And, you know, the other thing that I need to stress is that we should not have hostility between us. We should not be saying, oh, David Silverman shouldn't be doing this. Oh, Kara Santa Maria shouldn't be doing that. Mm-hmm. You know what, Kara, you and I will have, you and I will agree on what, 99.5% of the things?
Exactly.
Let's not concentrate on the 0.5%. I mean, let's realize that you and I are the really strong allies with slightly different approaches, and that's all okay, and that doesn't make me evil, and it doesn't make you evil, and it doesn't, you know, we have to look at this from a big picture perspective, because if you look at every other civil rights movement, including the civil rights movement, if you look at the women's lib movement, if you look at the gay rights movement, there's always been a breadth. There's always been Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Yeah.
There's always been the bra burners. There's always been the people with the assless chaps. You remember the assless chaps. and so there's always been the firebrands, and there's always been the diplomats, and that's how progress gets made. The firebrands come in and start the conversation. The diplomats come in and actually soften it and make it more acceptable. And this has worked over and over again. And one of the things that I hope the nice guy atheists out there will realize is that you wouldn't be in a very good position if not for the firebrands.
That's such an important point. I mean, this idea that there's got to be a bleeding edge. There has to be a bleeding edge. It's the only way for progress to occur. When I think about being a progressive political person, right? I'm somebody who is quite left-leaning in certain aspects, and I probably identify even left of the Democrats. And but my approach to my politics is my own, meaning that I have these ideas, and I like to talk about my ideas, but I don't like to kind of identify specifically in bipartisan politics, because I think that it actually like nullifies some of the movement that I'm interested in. But I look at people who have the energy and the bandwidth and the passion to be boots on the ground, you know, canvassers and campaigners. I look at people who are really working hard within the political spectrum to ensure that certain changes are made from a legislative perspective. And I look at my approach, which is talk about it to the people who I think can hear the message, get out there and vote every single time and do my civic duty. But my full-time job is not to dedicate myself to political change, because I am an activist, but I'm not a professional activist. And so I see the same thing with atheism, right? You are the president of American Atheists.
Right.
It's your job. It's what you do 100% of the time.
I love it. I have the best job there
is. Exactly. And so, of course, if you weren't on the bleeding edge, if you weren't the most firebrand person I knew, I would almost think that that was a problem. Whereas I might fall more. I mean, I'm probably not fully in the diplomat side. I'm probably somewhere between the two, because I do think that I have a special platform for my activism. But I also don't take up arms on a daily basis, because I have a full-time job and I have other interests as well. This is one thing that I identify as. This is one part of my personality and one part of my activism. I'm also a skeptical activist, and I think it's important to push on that front. And so it's such an important point that you made, that there has to be a bleeding edge, and there has to be people who are unapologetic in order to push that movement in that direction. And then there are people who don't even realize they're in a movement who benefit from that.
Hopefully everybody benefits from it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for me, there is also people inside the movement who will hate what I do and be vocal about it.
Of course.
And as much as I hate to admit it, they have to exist too. Because as people like me cause the conversation, there's going to be atheists who hear the conversation but hate the way I do it. And there has to be a home for them in the atheist movement. So there actually has to be a home for atheists in atheism who hate firebrand atheists, because there are people out there. There's a market, because there's simply a market. So this is something that we have to deal with. And I hope that as time goes on, people and I think Fighting God is making this case, that as time goes on, people are going to understand that it really does take all kinds, and that progress is made from multiple approaches. And I think that message is getting heard, even as the people who hate, the people who throw rocks and stones, they also have a relevant place in this movement, and I defend them too, even if they don't defend me.
It's interesting. I guess I wonder what your thoughts are about people who read the book, people who actually are willing to take the time to go online or go to their local bookstore to pay money and support your efforts, read the book, and then just are so anti the things that you wrote. How do you respond to those people who actually are so passionate about it that they'll write you the emails, that they'll reach out and just really vehemently fight against the words that you have?
So that has happened really few times, Kara. This is about the book, so I'm going to blow my horn just a little bit. By and large, the vast majority of people who open the book and read the book with the intent of hating it don't hate it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
By and large. I think that the number of times that I have received feedback from somebody who I actually believe has actually read the book and doesn't like what I say is maybe 3 or 4, like total.
Interesting.
The vast majority of people who read this book are liking it. And they may not agree with everything, but it's not like they're writing and saying, oh, I hate when you do this. I hate when you do this. Because, when I go on, you know, Fox News and I go on television or radio and I live on sound bites, that's one thing. I sound abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
But in Fighting God, I just lay it out and I make ethical arguments and I make moral arguments and then I back my stuff up with data, independent data from multiple sources, quantitative independent data. So a lot of people don't understand that David Silverman is not just some angry atheist. They think I'm just some spitfire who likes to piss people off, who likes to make people angry, and I get off on it. What they don't understand is that there's substance behind it, and actually quite a bit of substance, at least I'd like to think so. So when people are going to the effort and reading the book, by and large, they're liking it. And that's why, like right now on Amazon, Fighting God is 74% 5-star reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just amazing to me. But let's answer to your question now. What do I say to people who read Fighting God and still don't like me and really, really fight against me? Well, what I say is, hey, you know, just take the two things away. Number one, just allow yourself to know that we're stronger when we're divided and when we're united than we are when we're divided.
Sure.
Okay. So when we throw rocks at each other or when we don't call ourselves atheists, we make us look smaller. We make them look bigger. Just look at that part and see if you can absorb just that part, that when you say, I'm not an atheist, I'm a humanist, you're actually helping religion.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it for selfish reasons. Okay. Just think about that. And then maybe you can think about the fact that, you know, every single movement that has made progress, every single movement has had firebrands in it, has had firebrands who have who paved the way. So the formula is proven.
Yeah.
So just own those two things, that we're stronger united than we are divided, and the formula that you're seeing in front of you has worked every single time before. That everything that, or I should say, I should say more accurately, that every movement that has succeeded has used this formula, has had this breadth, has had the good cops and the bad cops, has had the Malcolm X and the Martin Luther King. And if not for Malcolm X, Martin Luther King would have been viewed much harder, much, much rougher. And Malcolm X actually wrote about this and talked about, you know, one of the things that he did was make Martin Luther King look good and acceptable.
There's even
a
scene. Yeah, there's even a scene in Selma. I just recently watched that movie that I hadn't seen it before, on a plane, by the way. So I was like bawling on an airplane, like looking like a total idiot next to the person next to me. But there's a scene where, you know, Martin Luther King and his wife have only had words with Malcolm X up until a certain point. And then he reaches out to Martin Luther King's wife not long before he's assassinated and basically proposes that they work together, and they don't even buy it. They're like, what do you mean? And he's kind of like, me being here helps your husband's cause.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that people see us as this different approach actually makes him stronger. It's true.
And the super secret is, Kara, and I'll tell you the super secret, but you can't tell anybody, okay?
Yeah, I'll make sure nobody listens to the podcast.
Yeah, make sure nobody listens. The super secret is the nice guy atheists are going to win.
Yeah.
The super secret is that the hardliners, the firebrands like me, over time, our usefulness is going to wane.
And you're kind of taking one for the team because you get the hate.
Well, yeah, I do get the hate, I mean, but I also make the progress.
We all get the hate. Like, let's be fair. Anybody who's willing to wear the atheist label proudly does get hate. Like, we know that it is it's a risk, and we know that it takes a lot. Like, we're asking a lot, because depending on the community you live in, depending on the people you surround yourself with, it shows a lot of strength to walk yes. around and say you're an atheist. So don't get me wrong. I'm not belittling the amount of work and progress that even somebody who's not firebrand does just by having the label. But of course, being on the bleeding edge, being the guy who's the president of the association that's totally identifies in this way, writing a book and having this firebrand approach every day, of course, you get like the hate. You get like when Fox News like shits on atheists, I know they're talking about me, but they like use your name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's okay. You know, I don't mind the hate. I can take the hate. And, you know, there's a point that I'd like to make about the hate. There's a group of people out there who can come out, and there's a group of people out there who can't. Okay.
Yeah.
And those people out there, there's a bunch of atheists out there, and they can't come out. Okay. They are stuck in for either because of their parents or because of their society or because of their location. They can't come out. And there's a group of people out there who are out, and there's also a group of atheists out there who can come out and haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, well, it will be a little tough for me. It'll be tough for me, but I could get over it. You know, people who are well established who just haven't come out. And my point is, to those people who can come out, it's your ethical responsibility to do so, because you're helping those who can't when you do. You're helping those who can't come out. We have a responsibility to our fellow humans, to our fellow atheists, and to help them come out. And there's a bunch of people who can't come out. A big swath of atheists who are stuck and cannot come out as atheists. And that makes it more important for those of us who can come out to do so. For those of us who can take a little bit of hate. For those of us who can take a little bit of heat. If you can take a little bit of heat, it's your moral imperative to take that heat.
Yeah.
For the other person. Because when you're the first atheist somebody meets and they don't like atheists, you're going to get the heat. But then the second atheist that person meets is going to get less heat.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're the first person, you're doing something for some other unknown person that you're never going to meet. That is why calling yourself an atheist is activism. That is why calling yourself an atheist is humanism. And in fact, that is why calling yourself an atheist is far more humanistic than calling yourself a humanist. Because you're actually doing good for other people.
It's true. And if you can't see that, all you have to do is notice the parallels, as you said before, with other civil rights movements, with the civil rights movement, with the LGBT movement, with the women's rights movement, mm-hmm. with the suffrage movement. Like, if you look across the board, you had individuals who, when they spoke out, they were endangered. And nobody yeah. in the movement would ask somebody who is especially vulnerable to step out, knowing that it would seal their fate. There were other individuals who were in a privileged position to be able to do that. Unfortunately, sometimes the end result was still just as tragic, but mm-hmm. nobody would ask somebody who will be facing certain death or facing a violent repercussion for stepping out and doing that. And I think that we all respect that. And I hope that people understand, I mean, just based on what you said, that you respect that as well, that you're not condemning those individuals living in those communities.
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, my goodness, no. These people need our help.
Exactly.
These people are very really the victims of religions as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're stuck, and they're living in many cases terrible lives. And no, there's no shame there at all. The shame exists only for the people who can come out but choose not to, because they don't want to take a little bit of heat. I'm pretty shameful of those people. Those people who can come out but don't.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who are strong standing and they're not risking anything, but they don't want to take the momentary heat of being known as an atheist, so that they can de-demonize the word for other people. I have a real disagreement with them, but for those who are stuck, I mean, those are the target market for my activism. Those are the people I'm trying to help here. I remember talking to I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I talked to four high school students came to me, and they were both from two different schools, two from one school, two from another, two rural high schools in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were the Secular Student Alliance clubs in both of those schools, two kids in each school. Okay? and they asked me for advice, and what I told them was that they were not the only atheists in their schools.
Yeah.
And that their schools were filled with atheists who were really, really glad that they were doing their activism. Those four kids, those four young people, they were able to come out. They were de-demonizing atheism for the ones who couldn't come out yet. And yeah, I hope very soon that those other kids in those schools can come out and join those SSA groups and join the atheist community. And that's what the activism is for, right? That's part of our goal here. There's no shame in being trapped. And I certainly wouldn't want to be assumed to be shaming people who can't come out.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't come out, stay in the closet. Try and help us if you can. Try and take care of yourself. I tell children who are children of very religious parents that if you have to stay, if you have to fake religion in order to keep a roof over your head and in order to keep your college tuition, do that.
Yeah.
You know, get independent, then come out. But yeah, we have facts in this country. There's a lot of bigotry against atheists in this country. And we are the most hated religious group, I believe, in this country, if not the second most. And it's something that we really have to understand and deal with and internalize, that there's a lot of people who need the help of the firebrand atheist. And some of those people, many of those people, are closeted atheists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would totally agree. That's the point of the movement.
Mm-hmm. That's the point.
So tell me a little bit about American Atheists. I mean, this is a really cool organization with a rich history that I didn't really even know much about. I was last night packing up my apartment. We bought a house and we're about to move in. It's very exciting. And I'm packing and it's late at night and I'm watching Forensic Files like you mm-hmm. do late at night on TV. And of course, the episode about the former president of American Atheists, who I suppose was murdered,
yeah,
came up on Forensic yeah. Files, and I learned so much about, what was her name?
Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Madeline Murray O'Hare.
And you talk about firebrands when it was dangerous to be a firebrand. I mean, I stand on the shoulders of giants.
Mm-hmm.
Madeline Murray O'Hare, I mean, you could say a whole bunch of things about her, but one of those descriptors has to be hero. This is a person who stood up when nobody else was standing up. This was a person who used the word atheist when nobody else was using the word atheist, when atheist was communism.
Mm-hmm.
This is a person who stood up, you know, in the Cold War, after they put "In God We Trust" to be anti-communistic on the money. Madeline Murray O'Hare raised her hand and used the word atheist and took it to court. So, I mean, I am very proud to sit in her chair. And she founded American Atheists in 1963. In 1995... she was kidnapped. She, her son, and her granddaughter were kidnapped and forced to take $600,000 out of the coffers of American Atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were, after they did that, they were murdered, dismembered, buried in a shallow grave. Years later, the perpetrators were caught. They led the police to the grave. We found the grave. Madeline had a metal hip. The metal hip had a serial number on it, so we definitely know it was them.
Wow.
And you know, the case is closed. And
was it religiously motivated, or was it just about money?
It was just about money.
Wow.
And I think Madeline would be most horrified about that she was murdered for money and not for religious reasons.
Yeah.
But you know, right now, American Atheists, I'm really proud of where we are with American Atheists. I'm a businessman. I have an MBA, and I run American Atheists like a tight ship.
Mm-hmm.
We have 5 employees. So all the changes that we're making to this country is being done with 5 employees. We have a good-sized building here in New Jersey where I sit right now. We have no mortgage, and we have no rent, and we have no credit cards. We have a debt-free company that operates with audited financials every year, and we post our financials online every year. So what we have with American Atheists is a very lean, measurably effective organization. And everybody can see exactly where their donation dollars go. Everybody can see exactly where their membership goes. And you know, I got to say something about membership, Kara, because, you know, 20 years ago, when I first started in activism, it was completely cool and common for people to be involved in the atheist movement and not put in any money.
Yeah.
You know, okay, I'm going to go to your convention and maybe I'll go to one of your lunches, but I'm not going to join because I'm not a joiner.
Mm-hmm.
That time is over, okay? When you say I'm not going to join because I'm not a joiner, I have to call you on your shit because that's exactly what religion wants you to do. Everybody out there, everybody hearing this who is not a member of the atheist movement needs to join the atheist movement, needs to pony up a few dollars, needs to pony up a few dollars. It is time. An American Atheist membership is $35 a year. We need your membership. We need your money. And you know, people say, oh, he's asking for money. That's just like religion. Well, guess what? It's also just like the ACLU and every other civil rights organization that changes this country in a positive way.
And so what do you do with the money?
We run programs like the Atheist Voter Program, which is right now when we're setting up people to go out to meet with candidates, presidential candidates, and actually record them talking about atheism, get them to talk about atheism, and get atheism on the table. And we have made the conversation change in this presidential campaign with Trump and with Rubio and with Clinton and with Sanders to make it more about atheism, to make us a part of the conversation. We went to CPAC, where we are actually bringing atheism into the conservative movement. Well, actually, conservatism already has atheism, but we're organizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can succeed in that, and did you see the Samantha Bee episode?
Yeah.
That was great, right?
Yeah.
And we had so much fun with that. But if we can achieve that big picture goal of establishing an atheist presence in conservatism, well, guess what? We're going to separate Christianity from conservatism. And if we do that, we win the war. We win the war. We take all the money from Christianity, all the power from Christianity, and we give atheists a second party for whom to vote with a clear conscience. Another thing we're doing is the Patient's Right to Know Act, which has just been introduced into the Arizona legislature.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that when you go to a hospital, and it's a public hospital, and if they decide that they're not going to tell you, that they're not going to provide a service because it's against their religious principles, for instance, an abortion or a tubal ligation,
mm-hmm.
They have to tell you they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Because right now, you can go to a Catholic hospital. If you have an ectopic pregnancy, they won't tell you that the best thing to do is an abortion. They won't even tell you that that's an option. You could die, Kara.
Yeah.
You could die.
And
okay?
There could be an out for you that because they don't believe in, they'll never even tell
right.
you it's an option, which is...
They won't tell you.
I so cannot said, fathom how that is legal.
And I can't either. So we have a law now introduced in the Arizona legislature that says they at least have to tell you. They don't have to do it, and they don't have to help you get it. They don't even have to tell you where to get it. But they have to tell you that there's a thing that they can that can be done to help you that they're not going to do.
Yeah.
That's all we're making them do. And of course, we're going to get a whole bunch of pushback from the Catholic service, from the Catholic hospitals, because, oh, no, we can't tell you because that might be facilitating, oh, I don't know, you living.
Yeah. So these legislative efforts are real things that you guys do. You guys lobby. You guys go out there and you push to have legislation that protects atheists, that protects freedom of choice.
Protects everybody.
Yeah.
Really protects everybody. I mean, one of the big points that I want people to understand is that when you look at LGBT issues, when you look at women's rights issues, when you look at women's equality, when you look at death with dignity, everybody sees different issues. These are all one issue, separation of religion and government. It's all separation of religion and government. Bodily autonomy, separation of religion and government. Death with dignity, separation of religion and government. One of the things that my mother said to me, actually, it was literally on her deathbed.
Mm.
She told me that the things that I do help everybody, that I help Jews, that I help Muslims, because we're fighting for equality, we're fighting for knowledge, and we're fighting for religious freedom, which is, of course, a religious freedom is a synonym for the separation of religion and government. Okay? They're synonyms.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a separation of religion and government, you're going to have religious freedom. If you're going to lose any degree of separation of religion and government, you're going to lose that degree of religious freedom. And so what we're talking about when you're talking about American atheists is you're talking about five employees. Yeah, five employees who are doing legislative efforts, legal efforts, political efforts, nationwide on a national level.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually, and of course, marketing efforts that are actually changing this country in measurable ways that I can defend. And that's what I talk about in Fighting God. And that's why I hope everybody will go to the website atheists.org and join up for American Atheists, because it's time. It's past time for you to say, I'm not a joiner. It's past time for you to say, oh, it looks like religion. And it is time for you to say, I'm going to help. I'm going to be a part of the solution. I'm not going to do exactly what religion wants me to do and sit down and shut up and close my wallet. It's time for us to all kick in. It's time for us to take this, because atheists are coming out of the closet in droves.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is clearly on the wane. Every poll shows religion is on the wane. Religion's power is on the wane. Ours is on the growth phase. It is time for us to strike. It is time for us to unify. It is time for us to go to the Reason Rally. It is time for us to join American Atheists and to buy the kick-ass book, Fighting God, by David Silverman.
That's so good.
With a foreword by Cara Santamaria.
Boom. And, of course, it's not just the five employees. It's the thousands of supporters and volunteers and people who don't work there but do work for it, for the movement.
Yeah, our volunteers are fantastic. We have 27 state directors. We have national affiliates. We have 127 now affiliates nationwide. We're doing really, really fantastic work on the local level and on a national level. And I am proud to be sitting in the chair of the best job in the world, frankly. I love my job. Have I mentioned, Kara, that I love my job?
It's great when people can say that too. It really warms my heart. I love my job too. And I know it's a position of privilege to be in, to be able to love your job, but God, it makes life better, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. I sleep so well at night, and you know, I've had jobs that I've hated, and I've done well at jobs that I've hated,
mm-hmm.
but you know, having a job where you actually make the world a better place, where you actually can measure yourself making the world a better place, it's a really good thing, Kara. And I'm really honored to be in this position, and I've been in here now for 6 years, and I'm looking forward to staying here for a while, I hope.
So before we wrap up, because we've been talking for an hour already, which blows my mind, I have to ask you, and I probably already did this the first time that we chatted, but I'm interested to see, A, if I remember to, and B, if your answers have changed. I have to close by asking you the same two questions that I ask everybody on the show. The first question being, when you look to the future, what is the thing that worries you the most and keeps you up the most at night? And on the flip side of that, what is the thing that you're most excited and optimistic about?
The thing that keeps me up worried about at night is our division.
Mm-hmm.
Our division makes us weak. We are an extremely huge part of the population, but our division makes us weak, and our infighting makes us divide. So the thing that keeps me up at night is things like the growth of Islam, the growth of the power and the amount of money in the Catholic Church, the amount of money in those mega churches, and the idea that we have victory literally in our grasp, or I should say figuratively in our grasp. we are capable of winning this war. And if we don't push hard enough, if we don't unite enough, if we don't solidify and fight enough, that we would lose a war we could have and should have won.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That is the thing that keeps me up at night. The thing that makes me happy is that our growth is coming from the young. Our growth is coming from the young because our growth is coming from the internet. The growth is coming from the internet because, once again, we are correct. We are right, and they are wrong. And as you know, as a scientist and as a skeptic, when you're right, the more information you have, the better. The more communication you have, the better. The internet gives a nearly unlimited amount of information, which is why atheism is growing so strongly from the young, which is why, as long as the internet exists, that growth will continue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're seeing is, yes, there's a lot of forces that are trying to to theocratize America. And yes, we are divided, but the amount of growth that we're seeing from the young is huge. Huge. And the reason that it's huge is because they're in the internet, because they're communicating with each other, and because, again, we're right. And that's a good formula. That's a good formula for success. It might be a longer term, but I believe it's going to be the reason that we succeed in my lifetime, not even yours.
I love it. All right. Well, yeah. As you said before, everybody, please go to atheists.org. Check out all of the membership opportunities there, all of the great activism that's being done by American atheists. Make sure to go to the Reason Rally this summer. Wow. When is it? Go ahead and give me a good plug for that.
The Reason Rally is a four-day weekend, but the rally itself is June 4th. We have a fundraising dinner with the Stars on the 3rd, which is a Friday night, and we have a mini convention on the 5th, which is a Sunday. Folks, if you've never been to an atheist convention, if you've been to an atheist convention, it doesn't matter. You've never had the experience of being there with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard and Bill Nye and, of course, me and Cara Santamaria. and it's going to be the most amazing experience. I wish I could tell you the things that I know that you don't know of who's going to be there and who else has not been announced. I can't tell you that, but please, folks, if you have any budget for any atheist event at all this year, it's all about the Reason Rally at reasonrally.org. Please go. You will not regret it.
And you can make it into a family vacation. I mean, this is like, it's DC, you guys. It's such a wonderful place to meet. And there's so much other stuff to do. You can spend time at the Smithsonian. You can visit all of these great governmental landmarks. There's a lot to do in DC. It's if you've never been to DC, it's definitely worth it. It's one of my favorite cities.
Reason Rally will also be a family-friendly event. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to put that out there. We're going to have Camp Quest there that will have children's activities as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. I don't want anybody out there to think that the Reason Rally will be like an angry protest.
Yeah, or like too adult.
Yeah. That's not it. There's going to be at least one live full band concert.
Cool.
I can't tell you who the band is, but I can tell you that you have heard of them. and I can't tell you who the second band is yet, but you have probably heard of them too. There's going to be several comedians, including Margaret Cho. We're really happy to have Margaret Cho. Paul Provenza will be back. And we've got a couple more comedians that I haven't announced yet that we will be announcing soon. It's going to be a fantastic experience for you and for your whole family. Everybody's invited, and of course the Reason Rally itself is free, so all you have to do is get there and get on the lawn where the Lincoln Memorial is and have yourself a little bit of history.
I love it. That's so exciting. And of course, one more shameless plug, make sure that you pick up Fighting God, David's new book, at your local bookstore, or you can check it out online. I wrote the foreword. You'll learn a little about my Mormon past if you don't already know. And it's absolutely wonderful. And David, thank you so, so much for joining me.
Kara, thank you so much for having me back on the show. I'm really honored to be one of the very few who gets a second appearance. And, I really take that seriously, and I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate it so much. I had a great time. And everybody listening, thank you for coming week after week. I'm really looking forward to the next time we all get together to talk nerdy.